Hello again, everyone, and welcome to a special Election Day preview episode of the CIG Insider NJ podcast. And on today's episode, we invite our listeners to pull up a chair on location at Iberia Tavern and Restaurant in Newark, alongside the expert political team from Insider NJ, for everything you need to know before tomorrow's statewide elections. We begin our conversation with a preview of some of the most fascinating races across the state, including LD21, as Assembly Republican leader John Bramnick is in perhaps the most difficult re-election campaign of his career. We discuss all the possibilities of that race, including who might assume the mantle of leadership in the Republican caucus if leader Bramnick suffers an upset. This leads us into a discussion on how President Trump may have had a potential impact on traditionally safe Republican seats across the state. Discussion then shifts southbound down to LD1 for the special election of Senator Bob Andrzak, who, as a Democrat in a moderate district, faces similar partisan fervor from his opponents. We then consider what will be on the docket for the legislature and the governor as soon as we move past Election Day and into lame duck. Marijuana legalization continues to be a major talking point, as is the ever-changing dynamic between the governor and the Senate president. Finally, Max Pizarro tells us why the Somerset County Freeholder race may be the dark horse race to watch tomorrow. So I invite all of you to sit back and enjoy the conversation. All right, we are here on location in Iberia Restaurant in the Ironbound section of Newark with the whole team from Insider NJ. I'll let them introduce themselves.
Max Pizarro, editor, Insider NJ.
Pete Oneglia, general manager, Insider NJ.
John Van Vliet, support.
Fred Snellflack, columnist.
Thanks for joining me, everybody, today. This is going to be a great Election Eve preview. This is going to air on Monday, so the election is tomorrow. I'll start with Max. Max, what is the one race we should all be watching out for tomorrow?
That's a great question, Paul. Look, I think that, gun to my head, LD21 is probably the most interesting battleground because we have a leader in the Republican Party and someone who's been quite a an identifying person in Republican leadership for a long time now, in John Bramnick. So I think the fact that he is actually in a fight in and of itself tells a lot about this election cycle. I would say LD21.
Bramnick's been in the Assembly since 2003. He's been the minority leader since 2012. He's very well known. I would say very well respected by his colleagues, and yet he's had this extremely difficult re-election fight, really from both sides, opposite ends of the aisle. Democrats who are challenging him have been criticizing his votes on gun control and issues similar to that. There are two independent candidates who are conservative, very Trump-like candidates who are criticizing him because he hasn't been Republican enough. Will he be able to thread that needle and appeal to more moderate voters, or is he in some serious trouble?
I think he's caught in the unfortunate double whammy of being a Chris Christie inner circle defender while at the same time having to toil in the Donald Trump era. So I think it's very difficult. I think that he did insulate himself very early on. One thing I've observed in these elections is it's very important to define yourself early. So he had a lot of money, a lot of national campaign money at the outset, where he attempted to define himself. And I think that that's going to prove significant ultimately. I think that he probably survives. The jury is still out as to whether his running mate, Assemblywoman Nancy Munoz, can survive. She was not in a lot of those Bramnick ads early on.
Right.
So I do think that it is a very significant race. It's one of the races where the most money has been spent, mm-hmm. both by Bramnick and by Democrats trying to take him out. I find it difficult to believe that he'll lose in the end, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did.
So if he did, that kind of puts the Republican minority in the Assembly in a little bit of a turmoil, because they'll be looking for their next minority leader. And there have been some reports in recent days about different factions of the caucus, more conservative factions versus more moderate factions. Who do you think would come and rise to the top to take control of the caucus?
So we've been examining that for some time, and we had a story some weeks ago on this. And the several names that have recurred are Assemblywoman Holly Schapese from Bergen County, who is herself in a battleground district where Democrats are expending resources, but I don't think that anyone believes she's in danger of losing. I think that she is certainly a leading candidate among the moderates, but I think that as the moderate forces have dwindled in the assembly, we need to really examine those assembly people on the right of the party. And I would start with Assemblyman Jay Weber, who certainly has some bona fides in that regard. And it's possible to look even westward. I would also not discount the possibility that a battleground-tested person like Ryan Peters might emerge on the strength of his personal story and on his survivability. In other words, here's Bramnick, who is pinned down in his own district, maybe not at ease to really help Peters, for example, but Peters survives anyway. Is that enough to maybe rebrand the caucus in Peters' image? It's possible.
And he's battle-tested. He had a very tough primary fight. He had an interesting primary fight in his district. There were some defections and some issues regarding that, and he was able to survive, and he came through a little bit stronger.
He did, and he really was tested, to your point, Paul. He was tested with that challenge of trying to put together a Trump-friendly image, but not overly friendly. And so I think that he would be a leading candidate, certainly based on his personal story of public service. He's an armed forces veteran, combat veteran, Navy SEAL. I think that the Republicans would be wise, perhaps, in the event of Bramnick's departure, to recast themselves around some identifying public service storylines, and Peters certainly offers that.
Do you think that the Republican Party is still reeling from the congressional races? The blue wave certainly hit New Jersey. You think that's still a factor that'll play a role in the election?
It's a great question, and I'd like my colleagues to jump in on this too and offer their opinions, but I do believe so. I remember talking to Senator Bob Smith in the last few weeks, who actually expressed his disbelief that Trump could become a saturating factor in this election cycle, a legislative state election cycle, by virtue of the emotions that he arouses in people. And I think we've observed that. I think that we see campaign extensions into a state legislative election cycle out of last year. So I would start, and this is where I would ask my colleague to really get in on the game, but I would start with Morris County, because you saw Mikey Sherrill forcing Rodney Frelinghuysen into retirement and then sort of creating a whole culture around herself, an anti-Trump culture. And now we see a battleground election in Morris County where Assemblyman / Senator Tony Bucco is up for re-election.
Yes, I agree 100%. I think what happened in Morris County is it's kind of changing to... Democrats are certainly much more visible there, and they're much they're in the game, so to speak. And, you know, some people talk about demographic change, but I think the real thing is that Donald Trump has done the Republican Party, a Republican brand in New Jersey, a lot of harm. And I still see that. I mean, District 25 is all of Morris County, with one little town, Bernardsville, in Somerset. And I think, like, the excitement that Mikey Sherrill brought to the district last year is still around. Now, the question is, what does it mean? Obviously, more people are going to be voting. More people will be voting last year in the congressional election than voting this year in the assembly races. But I still think that interest and that excitement is there. And that's why Tony Anthony, this is another interesting dynamic in 25, as most people know who follow New Jersey politics. Anthony Bucco, the state senator, passed away in September. And his son, the same name, even though the middle initial was different, Anthony M. Bucco, he has been replaced, his father in the Senate, which is normal that someone passes away, somebody else replaces him. But he's elected to stay on the ballot. So he's still, quote unquote, running for the assembly. If he wins, he won't take the seat. If he loses, he won't take the seat either, obviously. But that is, I think that gives Democrats a big issue. They could say, hey, Mr. Bucco, you're running for office, but you have no intention of taking that office. And again, it's a low turnout election. My belief is it's going to be very competitive, because maybe a lot of people don't follow this, but the people who vote are going to be following this. And Tony's not going to win any votes by doing something like this. His argument is that he's doing it for the Republican Party. He figured if he wins, the Republican Party wins, and this is a way to stop Phil Murphy. And that argument is going to go over well with partisan Republicans, but I don't know if it goes over well with independents.
So let's take a trip a little further south down the state, all the way down to the end, LD1. That's another race I think a lot of people are going to be watching. Thoughts on that, Max?
I personally find the race fascinating because I see the South Jersey Democratic machine insulating itself from the potential disadvantage of losing a seat. They've already made allowances for the potential for Senator Bob Anderjack, the Democrat.
Who replaced Congressman Jeff Van Drew.
Exactly.
Who made news a few days ago with his vote on the impeachment inquiry, I guess, rules establishment sort of thing that happened in Congress. He was the only Democrat to vote against it.
Very telling, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you look at that district, it's, in the words of Republican State Party Chairman Doug Steinhardt, it's the only district that Trump won where a Democrat resides as the sitting state senator. So Republicans see a real opportunity there. And to the strength of Trump in the district, Trump named the opposition candidate, Attorney Michael Testa of Vineland, as his co-chair of his New Jersey reelection campaign. So they're very confident that actually works in favor, unlike some of these other districts. And to Fred's point about Trump being a real drag on Republicans in LD1, he's not.
It's the exact opposite happening in Bramnick's district.
Right, exactly. And you see that with Van Drew's behavior. This is the lone member of the New Jersey congressional delegation who actually votes against the impeachment inquiry. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a fascinating race. Anderjack is running, obviously, with the fortification of the South Jersey Democratic organization, which includes the general majority PAC, infused with a lot of carpenters money, a lot of building trades money that comes directly from the contact list of Senate President Steve Sweeney. And he has this remarkable personal story. As an individual, actually gave up his leg in defense of his country in the Middle East. He's challenged by a very impressive Republican candidate, the Cumberland County Republican Chairman Michael Testa, who's run an excellent campaign. I think that Democrats have responded to this this Republican favorability in the district factor with a scorched earth defensive maneuver behind Anderjack, which makes it difficult for Testa to win. You're running against a war hero who's fortified by a lot of negative mail that makes Testa appear to be a partisan person, not a pragmatic person. It's a fascinating race. I think both sides believe they can win, Paul. That to me is one of the most competitive races in the state.
To what extent has the Senate president been involved in this campaign?
That's a great question. He was visible only at the outset of the campaign over the summer when he attempted to appear to undo damage done by Governor Murphy. So Murphy took away boardwalk funding for Wildwood. Sweeney responded by appearing at the side of Anderjack and guaranteeing funding for the boardwalk. After that, he has not been visible at all,
It's because it is a Republican district, so Andrew Jack wants to define himself as nonpartisan, pragmatic, problem-solving war hero more than Sweeney Stooge of the Democratic machine. So Sweeney has not been visible at all.
So it's interesting because it sounds like John Bramnick and Senator Andrew Jack have a lot in common. They're trying to toe this line of moderation. Senator Andrew Jack doesn't want to be tied too closely to the extreme left wing of his party. John Bramnick doesn't want to be tied too closely to the extreme right wing of his party. And if they're both able to thread the needle, they'll be successful.
I think that's a great way to talk about those races. What's interesting, too, to me is Bramnick has made Murphy the story. So as his challengers are attempting to tie him to Christie and Trump, he's responded by saying, look, this is a governor who has actually gone on record as saying, if you believe that property taxes are your issue, you should probably not be living in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Jack's challenger has made Murphy also the issue. He said that Andrew Jack has voted with Murphy 95% of the time. We all know that there's a rift in the Democratic Party and that Andrew Jack does really not identify too often with Murphy. And yet because he and the governor belong to the same party, that opens up the potential for the Republican to brand him as a Murphy Democrat, which is what Testa has tried to do.
So we'll just stay on this topic for another minute or two. Any other races around the state you think we should all be watching?
Well, we mentioned 21. I think interesting thing on 21, it's not only with John Bramnick is trying to walk the line, we also have two independent candidates in the race, and they're running as conservatives, and they're arguing that John Bramnick is not conservative enough. And I mean, that could certainly pose problems, because what you figure, whatever votes that they get, they're votes that John Bramnick and Nancy Munoz won't get. So I think that's another district to watch too.
Paul, I'd say,
I mean, that's the same. It's a district to watch, but it's another element of that district. Yeah,
and another element of those races in the 21st and 25th district. The governor this week released his schedule, and it's very heavy on campaigning in 21 and 25. And significantly, one of his best operatives, Justin Braz, has gone over to work in 25, which is Tony Bucco's district. So the governor's office sees an opportunity there. I also think they see an opportunity in districts that are not necessarily completely governed by the South Jersey Democratic machine. So there's the potential for a pickup in either 21 or 25 of a legislator who's not guaranteed to oppose the governor at every turn. But back to your question about what other districts are in play, I do see LD8 as that district where, again, the general majority PAC led by South Jersey power broker George Norcross is making a strong play, a strong money play. They've attempted for some time now to take complete control of Burlington County in the Trump era. And so I think that's the other critical battleground.
Yeah, Burlington has been changing a lot in the past several years, and it seems like that would be the final kind of straw that would break the back for the Republican Party.
Absolutely. It's a very fractured county. Fascinating. You have the retirement of Senator Diane Allen from the party. You have the flip of Senator Dawn Adiego. She was a Republican. Now she's a Democrat. You have the Freeholder Board controlled 3-2 by Democrats right now. They're looking to take complete control of county government.
One more race that it's been getting a fair amount of attention in the press, I think just because the amount of resources that Democrats have been expending on defense is LD11. The Republicans seem to think they have a shot at LD11 because it had been a Republican stronghold for so long. It recently changed over a couple of cycles ago, and obviously the election of Senator Vin Gopal was sort of a changing of the tide. Any chance Republicans can grab those seats back again, or you think that is not so much of a factor anymore?
I think the endorsement by the Asbury Park Press of the Republican challengers is not insignificant. I do, however, think that the combination of anti-Trump sentiment and
Democratic Party resources and Democratic Party organization built around the sitting senator, Vin Gopal, make the Democrats the favorite ticket there in that race.
So let's move on now. Once we get past Election Day, the day after, we're in the lame duck period until mid-January. Senate President, Assembly Speaker have a very, very lengthy set of goals, initiatives. The governor himself has a lot of things that he wants to accomplish that he hasn't been able to yet. What are some of the biggest things we're going to look forward to in lame duck? Fred?
Well, I think the Senate President actually said, look forward to marijuana. That's always a fascinating debate. It's interesting. I mean, obviously, I think if you recall, when this came up in March, I think when it fell apart, they were going to vote one day, and they just never voted. There were not enough votes in the Senate, but allegedly there were enough votes in the Assembly. So the thing is, who do minds change? I mean, would the fact that the election is over? I mean, you think about it. The fact that the election is over shouldn't affect anyone in the Senate because the Senate wasn't up for election in the first place. So it'd be interesting to see if the governor is twisting arms or if Sweeney is trying to twist arms and get things to change. I mean, that obviously is something to watch because legalizing marijuana is something that grabs, I think, public attention. But I think we know how fast time goes, that if they fail, I think the plans are to put it on the ballot next November. In the presidential election, where I think it would pass, it'll probably be a big turnout. So, I think it's probably coming down the road eventually.
Well, I would say, in addition to the legislative schedule, the intra-party fight for the chairmanship of the Democratic Party is clearly going to be a huge political issue going forward.
The governor has injected himself into that fight as well.
No question.
Yeah.
And really it comes down to whether the governor's own party is going to allow the governor to choose his own state party chairman. And that would be a tremendous break from precedent to see a sitting governor denied by his own party his choice of party leader.
Well, the governor's had a fairly difficult time in getting through some of his initiatives through the legislature, specifically with Senate President Sweeney. Do you think that's still going to play out? Do you think there has been a little bit more coming to the table and compromise, or is this going to be the same thing for the next couple of months?
I think we're going to see the same thing, probably intensified. I think that perhaps the elections have given these players an opportunity to try to appear to be on the same team. But I think as long as there is an investigation into the Economic Development Authority tax incentives, I think we have the makings of a bloodbath, not just a friendly Marcus of Queensbury rules rivalry, but a last man standing fight. I think that goes on. I think that every battle can be read as a proxy war into that fight, that power struggle in the Democratic Party between Murphy on one hand and Sweeney and Norcross on the other.
And we were talking a little bit before we started recording about the governor's upcoming role as the chair of the DNC. Does he kind of see that as a way to increase his leverage over the Senate president?
I'm not sure that it's increasing his leverage over the Senate president so much as it is the potential for him to gain favor nationally and perhaps create an exit strategy for himself. If he raises money for the Democratic nominee and that person is successful, Murphy has then put himself in a very good position to get out of New Jersey, to really extricate himself from this terrible Vietnamization of politics, the Hanoi helicopter, out of this crisis.
Who would want to get out of New Jersey?
Woodrow Wilson, for one.
that's a great mental image. I'll think of helicopters coming over the State House for the governor in the next year. So as we move on, Insider NJ, you'll be releasing your Power 100 list next 2 weeks or so. Pete, anything we can look forward to? Give a quick preview of that? Spoilers, maybe?
The list, as always, is going to be great. The power party is going to be great. It's going to be the biggest power party we've ever had. Everybody in New Jersey is going to be there, and we're looking forward to it.
Excellent. Any parting thoughts or anything else we should watch out for tomorrow for Election Day?
Well, hopefully, the turnout's not going to be good, but, I mean, for people who are into politics and who believe in government, let's just hope the turnout is, like, better than 25% or better than 30%. I mean, that's hope for the best.
Well, I'd like to hear from John, but I would offer this. I live in Somerset County. It's a control election year there. So Democrats picked up two seats on a 5-member board last year. If they win this year, they flip control. It's a long-standing Republican-run county. It would be highly significant if they were to take control there, and it would be a win for Murphy, who is affiliated with Somerset Democrats. In fact, in this developing chairs fight that we've discussed, the chair of the Somerset County Democrats backs Murphy's choice to lead the party statewide. So if she wins, Peg Schaefer, who's the chair of the Somerset Democratic Party, if she wins, Murphy wins if they take over control of the Somerset Freeholder Board on Tuesday.
My thoughts being that New Jersey is always full of surprises, and as we go into Election Day, you know, we here try very hard to understand and speculate, but you know, we can always get something thrown at us that we can't quite expect. That's the nature of New Jersey and New Jersey politics. Sometimes it comes at you like a freight train at left field.
Absolutely right. Well, guys, I appreciate the time. It was a great discussion sitting here in Iberia, enjoying a nice little meal. I don't see any sangria yet, but we'll work on that. And we'll make sure everybody to check.
Waiter.
Make sure everyone to check Insider NJ during Election Day for up-to-the-minute updates.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the
conversation. Thank you so much. Appreciate you coming out today.